for me, because I want to make friends and I want to like be everybody's best friend, I have to like wind through it and be like, that's not something you and I can talk about, or we will get in a fight, because I don't know how to keep my opinions to myself.
Welcome to the Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association. In this episode, we'll hear about what it's like to grow up a believer in a sea of non-believers, how humanist kids miss out financially, and the kind of anecdotes about humanist leaders that only their kids can tell. Today's adolescent humanists in the U.S. aren't the first generation of young people to be raised in a non-religious philosophy. They are the largest in modern times here, however, and the demographic shift means the generations that follow will likely be even larger. That means it's time for us to pay attention to the challenges and opportunities faced by teenage humanists. At the American Humanist Association's annual conference in Chicago this May, AHA convened a panel of familiar names. At least the last names of the panelists were familiar. This was a new set of humanists, however, the teenage children of humanist leaders and other longtime humanists. They came together to discuss the challenges of being a religious minority among their peers, charting their own paths, and finding ways to live up to their humanitarian ideals. We're sharing audio from that panel this week. Due to time constraints, part of the Q&A session for this panel is not included in the podcast. You can watch the entire panel on AHA's YouTube channel.
Good morning, everybody. So I'm really excited to be moderating this panel, these wonderful young humanists. George Bernard Shaw said, youth is wasted on the young. And of course, that's kind of a wise and jealous way of saying that young people just, they fail to realize how lucky they are with their all their physical and intellectual energy, their optimism, passion, the absence of jadedness, wrinkles, and the many decades of life that they have stretching out before them in which they can realize their dreams and goals. However, I think another way to see this is actually courtesy of Pete Townsend, the kids are all right, and we're going to hear about that. Now, as humanists, we often bond over and never tire of stories about people's paths to humanism. And typically, these involve a break from religion, whether it be a dramatic or sometimes painful split, or an evolution in thinking that culminates in enlightenment and feeling of liberation from the constraints of one's previous religious life. But I think we often forget that not everyone has had such a dramatic experience, and that some people who call themselves humanists have always done so. So today we have a special opportunity to hear from lifelong humanists, and even more exciting, from young humanists who embody all the energy and curiosity and sincerity of youth. Now, they're in that stage of life that's optimal for learning, but I think that they have a lot to teach as well. So I think they wouldn't necessarily tweak George Bernard Shaw to say that humanism is wasted on the religious, but I do think that they have a very unique perspective to share. So I'm going to ask each panelist to introduce themselves, tell you their kind of their story, and then we'll get into some questions. They really wanted the audience to have a nice chunk of time to ask questions, so we'll do that as well. Okay? So we'll start with Anya.
Okay. I'm Anya. I'm 16. I go to Hopkins High School, which is in Hopkins, Minnesota, outside of Minneapolis, and I grew up humanist. And when I was growing up, it wasn't so much that humanism was a big part of my life. I always knew that I was a humanist, but my mom really gave me a choice to explore other religions or be who I wanted to be, which made it kind of easier, and then to choose humanism because I'd seen other things, I'd seen what other people did with their religions, and I thought that humanism was the best choice for me. And yeah.
So my name's Tawny. You probably know my parents. I have been coming to AHA conferences since I was like 12 months old. I've seen a lot of AHA staff come and go. and I've followed my mom's coattails and Maggie's coattails, and I've been under the Evolve Fish table. And my parents gave me a choice to be who I was, but they didn't give me a choice of coming to conferences. So that was great. But I've learned a lot. I've met some really cool people. AHA conferences are always over my birthday, which is spectacular. So I've lost a lot of opportunities, but now that I'm older and looking back in 2020 hindsight, I can see that I've gotten more experiences than just pony-themed birthday parties. So I appreciate my parents, even though I give them such a hard time for it, because I have got to meet some really amazing people, and it's been a huge part of my life, even if people at my school don't know it's a huge part of my life. It's like my little secret that I've gotten more comfortable with talking about after my mom told me to grow a backbone, so that was cool. So, yeah.
My name is Haley Noon. I am 17 years old. I live in Colorado Springs with Tawny. I go to Cheyenne Mountain High School, which is not as, how would you say,
diverse,
open, as accepting of different people, like humanism and whatnot. I've grown up not only with Tawny under the Evolve Fish table, getting to go to conferences, but I've also grown up in a home of recovering Catholics. And my grandpa he came out that he was sexually abused by the church in his 40s, and that really impacted the family, because we're hard Irish Catholics, and to say something about our father like that is huge. That really took off his career as a lawyer, and he made efforts to make churches pay taxes, exposing that, you know, there's sexual abuse in churches, in a lot of churches, by people of power. So I not only grew up, you know, with atheist t-shirts on my head, but I also grew up protesting sexual abuse at churches. I grew up in a home where we didn't necessarily, like, we made it a point to know that we didn't need a book to have good morals or do good things. My mother always made it a point, as Becky does, to do good without the expectation of reward or expecting a reward. And that has really shaped who I am today, not only with being vegan, but with being a humanist.
Very good. So, my name's Ben Niosi. I'm 16 years old, and I go to Bancroft School in Massachusetts. It's a very liberal school, so I don't really face any, like, discrimination towards being, like, non-religious or humanist. I'd say the majority of kids there are non-religious. I've been involved with the American Humanist Association for a while. My dad, David Niosi, used to be president. So I've just been around this for a really long time. But when I was actually really young, I was fairly religious. I would go to church. I didn't like going to church. But maybe around like fourth grade, I kind of learned about all this, and I decided to kind of like accept it as my own, you know? One noteworthy thing about me, I guess, would be that I got cancer last year. And a lot of people have asked me if that really made me change my ideas at all, whether I like looked to God, but not really, no. Nothing like that really happened to me. And that's pretty much it, yeah.
So it sounds like, and we'll get into this a little later, kind of the degrees to which you share your humanism and who with and how you do it. But let's start with how you really define humanism. So you tell someone you're a humanist, and they say, what's that? How do you respond?
I usually say that humanism is the belief in the good that people can do, is the first thing I usually say. And then I say, not only do we believe in people and the good that we can do, is that I believe that people are inherently good, and that we have the ability to do good without any expectation of reward.
I agree with that. I go a little bit farther and just say that I believe in humans and the potential, and that just kind of cuts it off, and everybody's like, okay, I'm a humanist too. And I'm like, great. I think everyone is. And then I can go on and explain the non-religious pieces of it. But I think at the core of humanism, it's really just people believing in each other and believing in this mass of organs that are human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with what Tani said. I think it's all about the good that people can do without feeling like they're obligated to impress God or whatever. In my AP European History class, we were learning about the Renaissance and Francesco Petrarch, like the father of humanism. And people were shocked that somebody actually believed in like doing good and the power of mankind to change the world today, even if it's like 600 years later. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that you like necessarily have to be non-religious to be a humanist. It's just focused on like, oh, we can do this without the help of a God. You know, we can, we don't need a God to tell us like that this is the right thing to do. You know, we just need to be focused on our own accomplishments and do things on our own.
I think it's nice to hear that your sort of immediate responses are very action oriented, very, you know, it's not so much projecting. So that's great. So maybe can you talk about a time when you were open about your humanism and how that went? And, you know, maybe contrast it with another time when you were not open about it and why?
In fourth grade, there's a boy named Trevor Correa, and he loved God, and I just was so confused because in fourth grade, I didn't have that much extensive knowledge of the Bible or religion, so I just really wanted to know, like, if God created everything, like, if God created all the humans and everything all at once, like, when did he create the dinosaurs? Did he make them first? Like, when did the dinosaurs come into play? And Trevor was taken aback. He could not believe that I would question when the dinosaurs came into play. And then everyone in my fourth grade class found out that I didn't believe in God, and it was kind of tumbled out of control.
I had a friend when I was in kindergarten, and we were friends all through elementary school, and she was religious, but it never really mattered, because we were kids, so we played dress up and played with Barbies, and it was fine. And then in like seventh grade, we would go on spring break trips with my mom, and my mom listens to NPR, and you know, it was just a little bit too much for her, I think, sometimes. And she started getting really hostile about because she knew I wasn't religious, but it like started rubbing her the wrong way. And it was really hard for me to watch this person who I'd gotten so close with be like, well, you know, you're just not a good person.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and this week, we're hearing from the young humanists on the Growing Up Humanist panel at American Humanist Association's annual conference in Chicago this May.
I don't know why you think that. I mean, you play with my Barbies, it's fine. Like, what's the problem here? And so that was really, like, kind of put me back into my shell of, like, not talking about it, because I thought if someone who was so close to me could shun me so quickly, why couldn't somebody who I didn't know do it? And then when I got to high school, I go to the opposite high school of Haley. My high school is super diverse. It's technically inner city, except we live in Colorado Springs, so there's no inner city. And everybody has their people, and nobody cares. You're just you, and that's that. So it got a lot easier for me to find people who agreed with me, and if not, find people who were religious but didn't care, and that was their thing, and this is my thing, and we can talk about it, and then the conversation's over, and we go to lunch. So I think it's, for me living in Colorado Springs, it's been a balance because Colorado Springs is so conservative. You have to not for my parents, they just tromp wherever they go. But for me, because I want to make friends and I want to like be everybody's best friend, I have to like wind through it and be like, that's not something you and I can talk about, or we will get in a fight, because I don't know how to keep my opinions to myself. And that's been my biggest thing, is just figuring out when it's okay to be aggressive and when you just have to take a step back and be like, that's really cool for you. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's go on.
My experience in elementary school with non-theistic views were really negative. I mean, I had like kids telling me I was going to go to hell every day. And I mean, when you're a kid and you don't really have a full concept of the idea of God yet, all you know is you don't believe that. And your family really doesn't believe that. So you're defensive. But I had kids telling me I was going to go to hell and that I was like a bad person, or it's too bad that I'm nice because I'm going to go to hell anyway, like those kind of things. And I was like Tawny in the sense where I really wanted to have friends and have people like me, but to the point where people don't want to hang out with you because you're so nice, you know? You're so desperate that they're just like, don't hang out with that kid. So I'd make friends with kids, and they'd be like, well, I'm going to Sunday school in the morning. Are you going to come? I'd be like, okay. And I'd ask questions like, well, what if you don't believe in Jesus? And I got things like, well, Jesus is a present. You can take it or you can go to hell. And I was like, that's an actual thing I was told while coloring a Jesus. I was like, oh, God, well, what's hell like? And they're like, well, you're going to burn for eternity. And I was like, thank you. I'm 10. Yeah. It's not something you tell a 10-year-old, and I'm going to burn forever. But the older I've gotten, not only have I become more passionate with my views, but also I would say more educated in what I'm going to say. I've always like known what humanism is, but I haven't really had the best way of articulating it. More like, you're stupid. God isn't real. Like, how could you think that? To more of now my definition of humanism. And that has definitely shaped the person I am developing into. In my high school, I've really found people who are hardcore atheists and hardcore anti-theists, mm-hmm. and I do get along with them more than I would a Christian friend nearby. And going to a school that is not only primarily Caucasian and primarily white and religious of all kinds, it's just, I don't really fit in as well. But growing up in an environment that is secular, I have really found my place. And I'm really grateful that I have grown up secular, because I really am glad I didn't have to go through that transition of God isn't real. Mm-hmm. Now my community and my family hates me, and that transition. I'm grateful that I've grown up in a home where we do good to be good.
Okay, well, like I said before, I go to a very liberal school, so I've always been pretty open about my beliefs. And it's always been positive interactions I've had with religious people and everything. I have like a good amount of religious friends, and we can talk about it. It's not something that we have to just kind of like pretend doesn't exist. Everything, pretty much all the religious friends I've had, we've been able to talk about it, and it's been like a respectful debate, you know? Neither of us have been getting like upset at the other or anything. And I've never really felt any discrimination towards that, except for maybe with like my grandparents, they're fairly religious, so that's just the kind of thing we don't talk to with them. And I think that's the closest thing I'll get to discrimination in my circles.
Can I add something? Sure. So I talked about how like it was hard for me when my friends decided that like that's too weird for me, leave me alone. And it got easier to deal with that when I found somebody who like was open to it, I guess. And I always had Haley, and that was really cool because I always had somebody be like, oh my God, these people are driving me insane, please help. And so that was nice. And then when I got to high school and I started filtering people out, I found my boyfriend, and he like was religious. So I was like, oh, I gotta like figure this out gently, because you're really cute. And and I went about it, and he was like, well, I go to church and I was, sometimes. And I was like, well, what does sometimes mean? And he was like, I don't know, sometimes. I was like, that's not an answer. I need to know where to go from here. And as we've been dating, I kind of ruined him. So now he's a very hardcore atheist and loves arguing with my dad about religion, which is just so great for my mom and I. And it was a lot easier for me to now, like, go out and be like, yeah, I don't believe in God and that's totally okay and I'll make friends and that's great, because I found somebody who, like, instead of knowing that I didn't believe in God and shunning me, was like, that's so cool. Like, oh my gosh. Like, I've been in a desert and you're an oasis of water of reason and I want that. And that made it easier for me to be super vocal, because I knew that not everybody was going to be like, get away from me, you're gross. So, there you go.
I have something too. Sure. To add on to what I said before, when I was little, it was really easy to pretend like I was just like everybody else. Like, I would follow along when people talked about religion. I didn't really stay vocal about any of my own opinions or anything. When we used to say the Pledge of Allegiance in school, my mom would always yell at me. She'd be like, you don't have to say the under God part. That's not supposed to be there. You don't have to do that. But I would always say it anyway, and when I didn't say it, I would, like, be looking around, like, did anyone see me not say that one part of the Pledge of Allegiance? Yeah. Like, I was kind of paranoid of everyone finding out that I didn't believe in God, because I felt like it was such a bad thing to not do, because everybody else around me believed in God. But then in, like, junior high and high school, I started becoming more involved in my friends' religious lives. Like, I went to bar mitzvahs, I went to confirmations, I went to quinceañeras, I went to, like, every religious coming-of-age ceremony you could think of, because my school is very diverse. But that kind of helped me to figure out that if everyone else can be open about their religion, I should be able to be open about my non-religion. And here I am now.
So I think it's interesting that, you know, Haley, you were talking about, you know, hearing kids tell you you're going to hell and that kind of thing. And as horrible as that is, you had that foundation at home.
Yeah.
You know, where you were told, well, no, that's actually not the case. And you think about children who don't have that and how damaging that can be. The flip side of that is that you are young people. I mean, you are teenagers. You are naturally going to rebel against your parents. It's just how it has to be, right? At some point, you have to rebel in certain ways to set out on your own and figure out your own path. So I guess my question is maybe, have you ever sort of thought about rebelling in that way and exploring religion? How do you sort of carve out your philosophical break from your parents?
So about 2 years ago, my mom and I were riding in a car, and I looked at her and I told her I wasn't an atheist. And she almost slapped me and, like, pushed me out of the car. That's an exaggeration. She didn't do that. But I could like, hear her heart, like, drop into her stomach. And she was like, what do you mean by that? And I, because I wasn't saying that. I was just telling her that I didn't like the term atheist for myself. I was just telling her that I wanted to be labeled as a humanist. But those 30 seconds were the most terrifying 30 seconds of my life. So I pretty much realized that if I wanted to rebel about my like, around my parents, it wasn't going to be about that, because it would be not beneficial for me, because I don't even think I could make myself believe it, but also, like, I feel like I would be, you know how when people talk about they went into the military because 50 years back, all of their grandfathers have been in the military, so it's like, I just have to go for a little while? Yeah, that's kind of how it is. Like, I just feel like it's not possible for me anymore, because, like, to go any other way, because I've been so ingrained in it, like, it's so soaked in, I don't even think I could, even if I wanted to, I don't think I could do it.
I don't think I could ever have that urge to be like, darn, I really wish I was Catholic. Like, I've never had that urge to be like, you know what's really gonna get my parents today? Going to mass. Got them real good. Like, I've never had that. How I've rebelled, I guess. Not really rebelling. I've rebelled
morally, I don't eat meat, cheese, or eggs, and that really pissed off my parents, like, so much. Uh-huh. And really everybody else around me. When I told my mom and dad that I was, like, going vegan, I got 12 cans of black beans, and they told me that was my dinner for the month, and I had to figure it out. And that, I guess you could say that was how I grew out of my moral obligation with my parents. But if anything, I think I've become more passionate about humanism and atheism compared to my parents. I mean, they were kind of just like, yeah, we definitely don't believe in God and we're definitely against religion, but not as much so as Gary and Becky. So they kind of threw me with Gary and Becky, and now I was working for Evolve Fish, and Pawnee and I are, like, making funny t-shirt ideas. And that was kind of how I was influenced by kind of jabbing at religion, but, like, softly with, like, that was how I really became more passionate with the ideas of humanism and atheism. And the longer I am on this earth, even though I am a teenager, the more I find that secular ideas benefit the planet more than anything else.
I actually have a question related to that, but I wanted to ask you, Ben. You know, your father, of course, is somewhat of a high profile humanist. You know, he's been the president of the HA, but he's also involved in these legal cases. And so, I mean, do you feel like that's had an especial, any kind of unique impact on you? Excuse me. You know, trying to sort of navigate your own identity as a human.
Well, I didn't even really know that he was too high profile until maybe like a couple of years ago. Because I remember when he first became president, I wasn't really sure what he was president of. Like, there was a good like 6 months where I was like pretty sure he was the president of the United States. So like, I kind of just figured it out on my own. I didn't, like, he was very, like, good about, like, not pushing anything on me. He just, like, kind of let me think what I was thinking. And, like, once I did start talking to him about it, then he, like, told me about, like, oh, well, this is what I think. But, like, he made it very, like, clear that I was able to do whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I think being around all this kind of helped guide me in this direction. But, like, the fact that he was so high profile, I don't think that really did anything for me, because I didn't know.
Right. He was just president of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, like, that could have been anyone.
So we've talked, you know, we've been talking about intersectionality and things like that, and I guess I wanted to, I'm interested in the other issues that are important to you. You've touched on them a little bit, and kind of how they inform your relationships. So people raised in a religious tradition who rebel and reject it often bond with sort of fellow infidels, right? So for you being raised humanist, do you find common ground with people over other interests, you know, social causes and so on, rather than bonding over, you know, sort of a rejection of religion? And do you consider these other areas, you know, environmentalism or your veganism, Haley, feminism, do you consider that these to make up your humanism, or are they really separate from it in terms of personally and also relationship-wise?
I mean, obviously, I not only am I a feminist, but I'm also an environmentalist, and I'm a vegan. I mean, I've got the whole, like, liberal compile, and I mean, it all is a part of my humanism. Not only is my veganism intertwined with my humanism, but so is my feminism, and so is basically all of my activism. It's all based around the idea that we can do good and we can do better.
My ideas of feminism are just that I think everyone's a feminist, even if they don't know it. And I don't attach those things to my disbelief in God. I think I attach it to my own founded moral compass, because my thing with humanism is, like, I like the fact that it doesn't give me any rules. Like, I can be a humanist and do anything else in the humanist sphere, but I'm not, like, you know, not going to work on the Sabbath or not mixing my fabrics or not eating shellfish or blah, 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 blah. I don't have these rules to follow, so I can make my own moral code. And I think whether that's veganism or whatever, that's great. But for me personally, like, it's just
I'm doing what I think will make the difference in the world, and that might change. Like, I'm a feminist, but in 15 years, if male oppression is happening, I might, because all I think needs to happen in the world is having equality for anyone, no matter what. I think that, well, okay, maybe not, because then there's stories about whatever. Never mind. Sorry. But I think when it comes down to it, like, my belief in humanism is just based on the fact that everybody needs to be the best for everybody else. And that's whatever you think is the best for everybody else. Like, if you think going into Nicaragua and building wells will, like, change the entire world, then that's your thing. That's what you do. And personally, I just think it's, like, showing people that believing in God doesn't mean you're a bad person. And that's, like, my own personal thing is I go out and I'm me, and usually that's enough for people. And I'm, like, making people laugh or telling a story and they enjoy it, and I'm adding something to the conversation. And then whenever it comes out that I'm a humanist, they're like, oh, I didn't know you didn't believe in God. But now that I know that, I understand that not everybody who believes in God is a Satanist. And it's like, that's great. And that's, like, my own personal thing. And then Haley's thing is the veganism and, like, doing that for the world. And I just think everybody can find their own thing in it. And that's what's drawn me to it so much.
Anya, how about you?
I think humanism is really intertwined with any kind of activism that you do. A lot of religious people that I've met or heard of like to deny a lot of things that need to be changed in the world. And humanism kind of opens you up. Like, you have to accept that there are things that need to be changed, and you have to be willing to go out and do it. As the president of Hopkins High School Earth Club, a very prestigious honor, I would have to say that it's a lot of times hard to get people to care about stuff. They don't realize. They get kind of caught up in things that aren't so important.
You're listening to The Humanist Hour. I'm Stephanie Zavan, and this week, we're hearing from the young humanists on the Growing Up Humanist panel at American Humanist Association's annual conference in Chicago this May.
But humanism kind of helps me realize that there are things outside of the high school gossip that are important, or outside of the immediate circle of everyday life, that need to be worked on and need to be changed.
So before I ask my final question, I think, Tani, it's interesting because I think adult humanists grapple with how they define humanism and how they want this sort of humanist project to appear to the outside world, and what are the core values that we can agree on, and all of those things. So just to say that these are ongoing conversations, and I think as you grow and sort of start to form a more solid vision of what your humanism is, I think we're all hoping that you guys ascend, you know, to the leadership roles and so forth. Because it's not easy, you know, humanism, like this big tent where there's a lot of freedom, but we do want to project some kind of image, right? So my final question, and then we're going to open it to the audience, is what would you add to the AHA conference or AHA activities more generally to attract young people? For example, who would you like to see given the Humanist of the Year award?
I don't have an answer to that question, but I think we need a Snapchat filter. Wouldn't that be cool? Like a geotag of like the AHA conference?
Exactly.
I guess you could say that Snapchat filters attract millennials.
Okay, but I mean, there are other things, but I was thinking about that this morning, so it just clicked. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt you. Explain what that is?
Oh, yeah, okay. So Snapchat's this app that you, like, send pictures, and it's only 10 seconds. It's really weird and creepy. And they have these things called geotags, so they use your location on your phone So if you're in Chicago, you can like swipe through it and you'll have like a Chicago thing at the bottom of your picture. So everybody in the world knows you're in Chicago because that's the most important thing on the planet. Everybody knows where you are. And like they had them for prom and stuff like that. And it's just like this cool thing to like attach a place to the picture. And I was thinking about this morning. So that's just, I mean, I've been pretty close with Maggie through her picking of people. And she always tells me when she's super excited that we have this person to be Humanist of the Year. And I'm like, oh, awesome. And then she tells me, and I'm like, I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. I thought like having people like Neil deGrasse Tyson and Bill Nye just come was really cool. But I don't really know, because I think everyone who's in my sphere of being like uppity up isn't open with their humanism, I guess. Or like everybody who's humanist is like, I know that. And they're like, don't tell anybody. Great. You know it. Don't tell anybody. So I think it's kind of hard to get millennials interested in it, because the people who they associate as famous don't brand themselves with it, I guess.
So assuming that we could, you know, get this person to accept the award.
I've wanted Maggie to get Angelina Jolie for like 15 years.
Okay.
Yeah, I do actually.
So I mean, I'm not like really. I mean, I am a millennial, obviously, but I get excited about Lawrence Krauss coming. Like, those are the kind of people that when I hear my favorite theoretical physicist is coming to town, everyone's like, I don't know who that is. That's awesome. What's a theoretical physicist? And I'm like, oh. So I don't really have much input, because I get excited about the speakers that are currently here. But, I mean, I would say that millennials are more excited with the environment and helping it. I would say that. And I mean, possibly having more, I don't know, active, fun activities other than sitting and listening to people speak. I mean, we could do like a humanist run. And
games are always good.
Games.
Tag. I love me some tag.
Like something where, like, I don't know, they just had the bubble run in Chicago, where they like dump a ridiculous amount of like soapy bubbles on you while you run. That's really fun. I mean, I can see that attracting younger people. Yeah. I mean, you don't really hear an old man going, I'm going to go run in bubbles. Like, that's not.
I would do it.
My dad would do it.
Run in bubbles. Okay, good. See?
There's always exceptions. But, I mean, the older people I know really wouldn't want to do that. But anyway, I mean, maybe more active activities and more things that are like, we're all humanists, unite and plant trees. Uh-huh. I could see a lot more younger people coming to that, for sure, because, I mean, I think people hear planting trees, and that's really positive.
Definitely. Ben, do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want to see this turn into a thing that's like, oh, we need to cater to the millennials, because, like, then you're like going like, oh, what did Justin Bieber do that we can award him for, you know?
Oh, yeah, let's not. Like, let's not do that.
I'd rather see, like, someone who actually deserves an award get it that no one knows about than, like, someone, like, looking for something to give an award to. Like, I don't know. That just doesn't seem right to me. But I think it's just hard to attract younger people to something like this, because they already have their circles, you know? I feel like nobody's looking, at least my age and in my area, there's not really many people looking like, oh, man, I need humanists to talk to, you know? It's literally like, just walk down the street, like pretty much everyone is a humanist. And so they don't need to go to something like this to talk to like-minded people. It's all just like, everything's right there in front of them, so they don't need this, you know? Mm-hmm. And once you get older, maybe, then you'll be like, okay, I want to make a difference. I want to spread the word. But right now, they're not thinking, like, I really want, this isn't really something that they are passionate about, I don't think.
Anya, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I agree with Ben. I think a lot of young people don't really think about changing the world or whatever. I know when I was in junior high, all my friends weren't, like, super excited to become part of the Jewish faith, like, officially through their bat mitzvahs. They were excited about the party and like the $6,000 they were getting from their family. Like, they were like, I'm going to save up for a car. Haha, what are you going to do? I was like, nothing, because I don't have anything.
Yeah.
So, like, maybe humanists can invest in some cash-grabby ceremony. Like,
you have a point. You have a really
good point.
I don't object.
Oh, man, that was great. Okay. So I think we're going to start taking questions from the audience now.
I mean, like, racially, I'm technically Jewish, so I almost asked my mom for one. But then I was like, I don't think that's a good idea.
Hi. How common is it, according to your experience, for a high school student who's come from a religious family to suddenly have an enlightenment and really
common.
Change? Mm-hmm. It happens a lot?
Super common.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. My friend, go ahead. Okay, my friend B was raised Jewish, but now she's like, I believe that there are aliens over God. Like, God is not real. He sucks. Nothing, it's not real. Like, and her parents are really upset about that because they paid a lot of money for her bat mitzvah, but too late.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who grew up pretty religious and either through contact with me or something else changed their mind. I think I've done it to a lot of people, which is a blessing and a curse because some people don't like that. But I think it's super common.
Yeah, for sure. I've also accidentally converted a lot of people by explaining my views. I'm like, I just don't think that any of that is true. And they're like, oh,
I guess
the more I really think about it, it is pretty ridiculous. And
I don't think you should feel bad about that.
I mean, I don't really feel bad about that, but when you've got things like, you cannot hang out with that girl. She does not, what has she turned you into? I mean, you're wanting to save the planet. You don't believe in God. I mean, it's all gone to hell is basically the reaction I've gotten. But I've definitely had kids go, you know, the more I think about it, this is all bullshit. Yeah, for sure.
I do know a lot of people who used to be religious, and like now, once they've gotten into like junior high and high school, they've like realized like, oh yeah, you know, that doesn't really make sense to me. And from what I've seen, it's usually the more like overbearing parents who are like, we're going to church every single Sunday. Like those are the kids who like want to rebel, you know? And like, I don't think it's as bad when you're just like socially religious, you know, you're like, you have your like mom's church friends and like you have like Christmas together and stuff, you know, that's the people who stay religious, you know, cause they don't really have anything to rebel against there. It's not like, and for the most part, they are humanist too, you know, they don't really think like, oh, they don't really have this thing where they're like, oh, I need to like go after everyone who's not religious and convert them, you know? They're the ones who are saying, like, if anybody can do whatever they want, and that's okay with me, you know? And I think that's a good thing.
Hi, I'm so far away from this part of the world. I was just wondering, in my organization, there are more than 80% youngsters, if you see the whole number of the members. But normally we just discuss about the social problems there. But when I come to the Western part of the world, I see people are more concerned about like God and like defining ourselves being humanists. Just we're defining, okay, this God and that God, that religion and those things. So how that happens in the Western part of the world, especially in USA, how do you like involve in the community in the real issues, not only in God and all those matters, but some real issues in community like migration crisis, like the refugee crisis happening in the world? So are youngsters taking any initiation on those kind of particular issues where there is nothing to do with the God? Of course, it's always to do with the humanity. Thank you.
Personally, I think the U.S. in particular has a huge disgusting stigma of like, if you're under 18, you're a child, you can't do anything. If you're under 21, you can't do anything. And I personally have felt that pretty severely because my mom's like, you can do all this. And I'm like, nobody's going to let me do that. Nobody wants to hear from me. And I feel that pretty heavily. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is because nobody encourages us to do that. Like, oh, you're just a kid, don't talk about that. Like, you don't know anything about the refugee crisis, or you don't know what's going on with Bernie Sanders. Like, you're just a millennial jumping on the bandwagon. It's like, no, I listen, I have ears and I have a brain, I promise. Like, it doesn't just happen at 21 that my brain grows out. And it's, I think that's a big deal, is nobody supports it. It's kind of like, you're a kid, that's just what you think now. And I think that, and so then the only thing you can influence is yourself. So you can be all self-involved, like God and myself and my identity and how I interact, but nobody, I mean, my parents do, which I'm super fortunate about. Like, they really encourage me to, like, get out and do things. Like, my dad took me to, like, scoop out mud when this town near our, like, this little place near our city flooded. And everybody was like, yeah, I'll go. And then it was just me and my dad. We were the only ones that showed up because everyone else had their own things to do. And I think, I mean, that's a small scale thing when it comes to, like, refugees and stuff like that. But I think that's a big deal, that these people had the opportunity to help somebody else and to, and it wasn't even that hard. Like, it was a 4-minute drive and they were like, no, that's too much for me. I can't do that. I have my things to do. And I get that, like, life happens and you have to do things, but there comes to a point where picking yourself every single time over doing something that might even make you happier than staying home and watching Netflix for 45 hours, like, you might just have to do that. And that's okay to do that, because just because you're a kid doesn't mean you're, like, not worthy of doing other things besides that.
I don't think that's true in my circles, at least, you know? Like, everyone at my school is very encouraged to, like, do what they can to make a difference. It seems like every other week there's some kind of drive to help someone in need, you know? And I'm very thankful for that, and I'm kind of surprised to see that that's not the case everywhere. You know,
I'm really jealous.
I've kind of taken that for granted, I guess. You know, everyone's kind of encouraged to do what they can.
There is definitely, like, a pushback. No one really takes you seriously when you're under 21, really. Is like, you have an opinion politically or really anything, anywhere. Mm-hmm. And people are like, but you're stupid, so it doesn't count. And that is definitely a pushback, not only with making a difference, but with everything.
I have a comment and a question. So the comment is that I think next year we need to have a millennial AHA dance party. And
yes!
I would like to organize that with you. Is a serious question for Ben, if you feel comfortable answering. I was wondering, in the face of illness, a lot of people turn to God and religion and the communities and support that come out of churches and things like that. I was wondering what kinds of things you were able to turn to for support, motivation, inspiration, and hope when you were facing your illness.
I'm sorry, this might be kind of a boring answer, but I just kind of slept for a lot of the time. It was I didn't really, like, have too much, like, philosophy going on in my head at the moment. I was just kind of, like, I just wanted to, like, get home and sleep, and that was it, and that was my motivation, you know? I'm sorry if that wasn't exactly the answer you were looking for, but it's the truth, so.
I'm not given to magical thinking, but I'm sitting there daydreaming and thinking, how can I forge your voter registration card so you can vote in November?
Let me know. I'd love to.
My question is this. As you guys are getting older, I'm sure you're sort of pivoting towards looking at colleges, and I just want to ask, not necessarily in the phrase of what do you want to be when you grow up, but what colleges are you looking at and what do you want to study?
In the college process, you get a lot of annoying emails, like hundreds of them every day. And you get asked, like a couple weeks ago, I got asked to do a survey for Marquette University, and that's in Wisconsin. I'd never heard of Marquette. I was like, okay, free survey. You know, they were offering a t-shirt that they're going to send in the mail. So I was like, I'm in. I want a t-shirt. So I get like 15 questions into the survey. And then all of a sudden it's like talking about like Catholicism and like how much you believe in God. And I was like, oh my God, Marquette is an extremely Catholic university. Like, how do I get roped into this? So looking for colleges, I think it's important to just look for a really liberal environment where there are a lot of different people around, like not predominantly one group of people is represented at the university or college.
apparently I'm a hot topic for what, Regis Catholic Christian School? I don't know. This school has sent me like 15 or 16 letters, like paper letters. And they're the only school who's done that. And they're like, we love you. We want you. And I'm like, why? You don't love me. You don't want me. I promise I would make problems for you. And I think I have no idea what I want to do. I know I want to do something with medicine. I don't know. It's like, it's really hard for me because all these, like, I come to these things and all these people are doing such great things. And I'm like, all I really know is I like watching Dr. Pimple Popper videos and I really like helping people and I like babies.
As always, we value your feedback on the show. Have a comment or question for today's guests? Have a suggestion for a guest you'd like us to interview? Email us at humanisthour@americanhumanist.org or call our listener feedback line at 202-618-1371. Thank you again for listening to The Humanist Hour, the official broadcast of the American Humanist Association.